Hi, this is Hugh Greenwood from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Whatever I've been through, the moment I see you, things
are looking on. Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Vasic. You can find me on X at Hashtag Kangas, Instagram Hashtag Kangaroos podcast, TikTok Hashtag Kangaroos 1. So tonight I welcome to the show Siobhan Rowe and a very special guest. I've had him on before actually, but former North Melbourne champion Troy Makepeace. It's been a while since I've had Troy on. It was good to get his thoughts. He did a very passionate tweet last week about the message from Clarko and, you know, referencing stay the course and we know where we're at and so forth. So I wanted to talk to him about that and, you know, why he's so frustrated at the moment, like a lot of supporters are. So there was a lot to go through tonight, so I'm not going to waste any more of your valuable time. Let's bring on Troy Makepeace and Siobhan Rowe to talk about this upcoming game against the Bombers on Sunday. Tonight, I welcome back my Thursday regular, Siobhan Rowe, but she's also joined by former North Melbourne legend and the man that made tattoos cool, Troy Makepeace. Troy, welcome back. It's great to have you on. I don't want to downplay you, Siobhan, and great to have you on as well. But Troy, let's start with you. And you put out a strong tweet after last week's game about the message from the coach, Alistair Clarkson, after the game, referencing stay the course and we know where we are at. And that this wouldn't have been accepted by your old coach, Dennis Pagan. Now, I'm paraphrasing a little bit there. There was a swear word in there, but you edited that. You are obviously disappointed with the same message each week, like a lot of supporters are, aren't you, at the moment?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Dean, and good to chat to you and good to be with you again, Siobhan. Yeah, look, there was a tweet out of frustration, I guess. I've been trying to sort of stay off the social media a little bit, just sort of read little bits and pieces, but yeah, it got the better of me. It just seems to be the same sort of message been coming out, and I get it. Like, I'm not disputing the message at all, but you'd think, you know, with, you know, what, nine losses in a row, and yeah, we're still getting the same message, and we're not getting any that what appears to be any change on the field in terms of you know, intensity or attack on the footy, and you almost want to see. I'm not saying he has to, but you almost want to see the coach or someone just go off their head for a little bit, just to show there's a little bit of fight, a bit of passion there. And you know, I'm not saying that's not happening behind the scenes. We're on the, you know, this side of the fence, and they're, you know, behind the walls, and you know, they might be like drilling each other and, you know, getting stuck into each other and venting some frustration. But it just seems to be where, from my point of view, the messages are just a bit too nice at the moment, particularly with the results that we've got. At the moment, you know, the defeats, you know, games are over by half time, and there's frustration building. I dare say there's frustration building amongst the playing group as well, but I just want to see a bit of passion there, a bit of fight. You know, a couple of weeks ago we saw Sam Mitchell come out, you know, openly saying he wants to bring the mouth guards out to footy training and all that sort of stuff, and I knew from that point that Hawthorn were going to come out firing, and they did, and be something. It doesn't have to be that, but, you know, just something, some sort of passion or fight, and, you know, to say that, yes, we know things are going to turn around and they will turn around, but, yeah, just want to see some frustration that things aren't happening the way that we would all like them to be.
Yeah, it's and that's a fair enough message, and I spoke to you off air about this just for a little bit, and it's fair. You know, it's easy to come from supporters, you know, that in general supporters, but to get it from a former player, a very good player as well, that's a different story, and that's with hopefully, yeah, this message goes through to you know, coaches and so forth, that this shouldn't be the standard and be accepted so easily, because Troy, this wouldn't have been accepted by Dennis Pagan, would it?
No, and I know it's different eras and things like that, and different coaches, and, you know, things are a lot more scrutinised, you know, in the media these days, a lot more scrutinised, you know, from the everyday fan as well, the access that, you know, the everyday fan has to the inner sanctum of footy clubs these days. You know, everything's available and scrutinised. So I certainly understand that, and I sort of played in a different era in that sense. And, like I said, it may have happened. It may be happening behind the scenes. You know, there may be some frustrations expressed that we're not seeing out here. But, yeah, I just sort of thought, you know, put it into my perspective of when I was playing, and I knew Dennis wouldn't have stood for that, and it gets you thinking about what we stand for in terms of, you know, what does shin bone spirit actually mean, and, you know, is it just a throwaway term now, and you know, is it sort of watered down to just being that, and we forget what it actually means and what it actually stands for. I certainly think it stands for something, but it's sort of been lost, I guess. And, you know, it's just an expectation that we're seen to be not successful, and we're not a very good side. So the expectation is we lose and we just roll over and we go again next week. And, you know, the sun comes up tomorrow and, you know, we go again. But if that sort of makes sense, mate, yeah, it's a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, no, I get that. And, yeah, you're like a lot of supporters at the moment that are very frustrated. And, yeah, we seem to be getting the same message every week. And, yeah, we want to see, yeah, like you sort of said, we want to see that shin bone spirit. When you guys played, like even under Danny Laidley, he seemed to, you know, get, the best out of each individual player. And you had a really good system. And, you know, it was certainly weren't the most talented team. I mean, there's a lot of talent there. But we certainly, had a lot of spirit and fought for four quarters and got some really good results and, made prelim finals. So that can't be underestimated back in that day. But, we are where we are, I guess. Siobhan, welcome. Now, are you surprised or disappointed that we don't seem to get any messages from the club hierarchy, i.e. The president? She seems to be very quiet. And the only thing we've heard from her is that she's been off socials for a month. But it'd be nice to just get a message off her, wouldn't it, at the moment?
I think so. Look, nice to be with you both. It's obviously really difficult because every single week we as supporters watch the games and it's really hard to see improvement. There are passages of play or moments or particular players that I think all bring us a smile. But I think Troy summed it up nicely there. Just at the moment, it'll change, but it seems that we are a penciled in win for a lot of clubs. And What really kind of disheartened me is a lot of clubs are now sort of resting their players against us. And I think it's going to take a while for us to change this losing culture and environment that unfortunately is a part of the club at the moment. I still think that we lack quite a lot of star quality and it's going to take a lot of time. We are all aware of that. No one's under any illusions about where we're actually at. But in the same breath, I don't know what can be said, but it does feel as though, and Clarko has mentioned it a couple of times, that our club at the moment are an easy target for commentary and relocation talk and whatever other sort of smack fills up the time in the media environment. And there's only so much that you can respond to. And I understand in some ways why they don't want to constantly come out with a comment every time there's an article or a piece written about our club and where we're at the moment. It will take some time to turn around. I did like Todd Viney's interview on radio the other day. That probably put some of us at ease a little bit. His commentary around not applying for a priority pick was also quite an interesting discussion point that maybe we'll touch on a little bit later. There was that sort of interview that was done and Clarkson and Viney did do a members Q&A where some of these points were sort of touched on. One of the questions were, did Clarko realise that, you know, things were as bad as they were? And a lot of the commentary is, you know, you just stay the course, stick with it. Things are going to turn around in a couple of years' time. I think why we're all frustrated and angry and I don't know if I'm just speaking for myself here, but there are times I watch the game and I just ask myself where the improvement's coming from. Maybe a comment about why some of the on-field performance seems to have slipped so significantly. I know we lost a lot of experience. I think that's probably lost this year a little bit in how much we lost in Goldstein, Mackay, Zeeble, Cunnington, Hall, all of these kind of guys. But at the same time, it just looks like a lot of players have stagnated as well. And the on-field is just a bit of a disaster at the moment. And it was touched on that you've got to get the off-field and the culture and the environment right before we start seeing results. But we cannot roll up every week and lose by 10, 11 goals. It's just not good for anyone and the club at the moment. And maybe some more explanations on how we turn that part around whether or not there's a description of, right, we're trying to win a quarter, we're focusing on contested possessions or inside 50s. Like, if we're looking at certain areas of the game, we can improve week in, week out. Because at the moment, it just feels like we're a little bit lost, and every week seems to feel a bit worse than the other. So the lack of messaging from the hierarchy has been a little bit damning, I think. But there's only so much that can be done in the same breath. And some of the sort of leaders are expressing what they can at the moment, which unfortunately just isn't a lot, because they can't promise a lot. A lot of this sort of stuff is, I'm sad to say, it is unknown. You don't know how things are going to play out. It's just time, I think.
It looks like it at the moment. Now, Troy, 550 plus point losses in the first 8 or 9 weeks. The club not asking for a priority pick, as Siobhan just touched on. Are you a bit surprised that they're going down that route? I mean, what's the harm in asking the AFL for a priority pick, especially it looks even likely that we might not even win a game this year.
Personally, mate, I'd be embarrassed if we asked for a priority pick. We've been, you know, given a good chunk last draft period. I think I may have been on record, or maybe not, of saying that if we don't make the most of this, well then, we don't sort of deserve to climb up the ladder, because we've got some quality young players that we can certainly build around. So we need to make the most of that. I mean, we look likely to finish around the bottom again this year, unfortunately. So there's, you know, another early draft pick that we're going to get. So there's another young talent. The mid-season draft is coming up. I don't know what we're looking at there, but there's certainly should be no excuses about being able to climb up the ladder. And we need to make the most of what we've been given. And then, you know, as frustrating as it is, and I know, you know, we're like we said before, we're hearing the same sort of message, but we have to, trust the process, and, you know, trust that these guys are doing the work behind the scenes, and, stick fat and, as they say, stay the course. But, you just got to roll our sleeves up and get on with it, and it'll be no better week to see a response or see some sort of change than against the Bombers this week.
Well, we certainly hope so. I mean, I guess the point of the priority pick, Siobhan, is that we haven't got like the Gold Coast got a few years ago, where they got top-end draft picks. We've sort of, like, I know we got 5 picks in the first round, but they were end of first rounders, a couple of them, and we got a future first rounder, which we traded for Gold Coast. So I think we ended up with 5 this year. I mean, if you're going to get a priority pick, there's no guarantees within the first rounders, as opposed to Gold Coast, who got first and second picks and so forth. So, yeah, my point is, I mean, if we're going to ask for a priority pick, you'd probably want something in the top 2 or 3, wouldn't you, to be assured that this rebuild can turn around quite quickly.
It's a really interesting conversation, and maybe one that is born out of nothing, because clearly we won't be asking for it. But from an AFL point of view, I just think that we, for them at the moment, and I mean this in the most respectful way possible, are a blight on the competition. They don't want a team in the competition that every week rolls up and is not competitive. And there are mechanisms in place to make sure that that doesn't happen. But I also completely understand the argument of, we sort of made our bed and it's time to lie in it. And how much assistance and help can we get before, you know, things just reach fever pitch a little bit. But I get your point in that. I just think the compensation that Gold Coast got, where they picked up Rael and Anderson in the same draft, that shaped their midfield for a long time to come. Yeah. But you can also say that if they gave us pick 1 and 2 this year, and we selected Smiley, for example, and then used pick 2 for whoever, whatever we might go down the path of doing it, and whether we traded it and split it up for Luke Traynor and went for another tall player. I think at the moment there are so many holes in the list that need to be filled that it's like a little bit scary. And we've touched on it in previous podcasts. I think clearly key position talent's a huge problem for us, and one that we need to address sooner rather than later. But I also think that, I mean, it's weird to say, but our midfield still needs some work as well. And we might touch on Will Phillips a little bit later, who lost his place in the side, and maybe we do need another mid in there. So there are still a lot of drafts, I think, that we need to go to, and it just depends whether or not the AFL want to see us languish down the bottom of the ladder for more years than maybe would be necessary, I guess. But it's a double-edged sword, massively, this sort of conversation, because we do unfortunately have a history at the moment of also not developing players very well either, where they'll come in with a lot of talent and then they'll hit their peak early on in their career, or they'll stagnate, whatever it might be. And there's an argument that no matter how many sort of players you get through the door, that maybe they won't come on, or you know, you don't want to have a team full of kids or whatever it might be. There are other forms of compensation that maybe the club might be looking at asking for, or the AFL will look at giving us potentially, whether it's the ability to pick up some more mature age players or a few more list spots, whatever it might be. I'm not sure what it is and what it looks like, but I just, if we went the whole season without winning a game, and that's a major if, I don't know how it's viable to just go about your business and maybe suffer this for many more years to come. Maybe as a fan, I'm just impatient and I'm wanting to see us turn things around, and I didn't think it was going to be as grim as it was this year. But I don't know for how many more years we can go being like this. And I still don't think there's enough star quality on the list either. And personally, the way I look at it is the way that you rise up the ladder is a team of youngsters growing and building together and winning together. I don't know how long that's going to take, but at the end of the day, I think it's a time thing. We kind of keep going back to the same thing, but I think it's time, and it's how long the AFL want to give us, if they're willing to come to the party in regards to giving us some sort of help, whether it doesn't need to be a priority pick, but something to at least support the kids or build a structure for the time being.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you talked about the list as well, having a lot of holes in it. But another thing is that's been mentioned a lot this season is leadership, Troy. We seem to be really lacking leaders out on the field. I mean, you played under some fantastic leaders, Anthony Stevens, Glenn Archer, just to name a couple. What makes a good leader is just the actions that they do on the field. Is it as simple as that message?
No, there's a lot off the field that they do as well. Adam Simpson, one that comes to mind. Yeah. I really loved his leadership, just how he brought the playing group together, you know, at training and, you know, in the rooms or before games, or, you know, little things like specifically the way they lead by example. As we know, Glenn Archer was not the most talkative of leaders, but he certainly led by example. So there's that side of leadership. Simo was very, very good communicator. You know, I think we can all agree, we can see that come through in his coaching, how he goes about it that way, and how he can sort of gel a team together. So, yeah, look, I don't know the guys personally, you know, Jai and Luke. I don't know what they're like behind the scenes. You know, we can only judge by what we see on the field. And, you know, there's certainly some mannerisms and leadership qualities there that come across really well. You know, but, yeah, how that's quantified, I guess, in terms of how much leadership or their particular leadership is transposed to the results or output from other players and what they get out of his teammates and things like that. That's hard to sort of quantify the effect of, you know, it's easy to sort of look at it and go, well, you know, it's their fault because we're not playing well, and, you know, it's their fault because we're losing. But it'd be certainly, I think it'd be disrespectful to look at it in that way, in the same sense. So, yeah, look, it's hard. Yeah, you mentioned the names before that we have seen go in the last couple of years, and, you know, that makes a big difference. You know, you look for that on-field bull to lead by example, and we don't sort of have that at this stage, you know. So I guess we sort of looked at Luke McDonald to take that mantle and lead from, you know, from the back, and can see everything in front of him and can direct and things like that. But he sort of struggled early days, you know, this season. And I guess maybe some of his sort of concentration or, you know, thinking was more about trying to get his game back on track
before he could sort of lead the team the way that he wanted. And, you know, Jai's had his own sort of struggles, as we've seen as well. And they seem to be great fellas, but I don't know. Like I said, I don't know them personally, so it's hard for me to judge their leadership qualities and what they bring to the table specifically. But yeah, we do lack that that leadership bull out there to sort of lead by example and sort of drag players along with them. It's a little bit at this stage fragmented in the sense that, you know, everyone's sort of trying to do their own thing to bring their teammates up, and we're a little bit disjointed at the moment in that area. So yeah, we somehow need to sort of gel that together and bring that together and have that one team mentality. And you know, it's easy for me to say, but yeah, things will turn around.
Well, yeah, I mean, we just judge them from what we see on the field, I guess. And like you said, there's a lot of factors to it, and what they do off the field as well is a big part of it. So, yeah, hopefully they can turn it around. Yeah, and you also mentioned we lost a lot of experience. So I think we lost about 1,300 games of experience over the off-season. I think that's starting to hurt us a lot now, and it's probably hurt us a lot throughout the course of the season. When we've faced adversity, we seem to have struggled, particularly out on the field. Siobhan, it hasn't all been too bad. This week we've got Colby McKercher get his Rising Star nomination. It feels like it's been well overdue, but because the team has been playing so poorly, I think that's why we've had to wait till round 9 for his Rising Star nomination, because I think he should have probably got it a couple of weeks ago, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. It's a really big positive for us. I mean, I can always mention the downside, which of course is that unfortunately with that foot fracture or a foot issue he's got at the moment, he won't play this week, but he's putting together a really, really nice body of work over the course of the season. I think the last few weeks he really started to find consistency in high numbers, which is probably what led to the Rising Star nomination, but thoroughly deserved and probably a little bit too late in my opinion, just because of how good he's been. And I think in the side this year that has been struggling, his ability, a lot of the times when I have been watching and you're kind of down in the dumps, I mean, I think Clarko referenced that run against Hawthorn quite a few times, but it's hard not to get excited by something like that, because I don't think he'll stay at half back for too long. I think he's a natural born midfielder, but he's got great skills. His kicking's 99 times out of 100 very accurate. He's got a bit of pace about him. I think he's got a bit of class and poise, and he'll only get better. He reads the game really well, and I think you're sort of mimicking Sheezel in the way that in his first year he's just kind of becoming a bit of a general down there, down back, and he's played 9 games of AFL footy. So good on him. Incredibly well-deserved Rising Star nomination, and I think it's a very impressive body of work so early on. I think our nucleus of young players coming through with the likes of McKercher, Sheezel, Wardlaw, these guys that we've only picked up in the last few years, I think we can all get really excited about what they can do together as a group. And there have been times, it's not quite there yet, where a lot of those players have been involved in a passage of play, and we can see what we're trying to build and what we're trying to create, not just for the short term, but for the long term. And there's no doubt that Colby's going to be a really big part of that for us. And hopefully the halfback is just the start of sort of his experience. And once he gets into the midfield, he's going to provide those sort of footy smarts and skills for us for a long time.
Yeah, Troy, he's got tremendous line-breaking ability. I mean, he's got a lot of pace. He looks very classy on that left foot. Similar to you back in the day, Troy, behind the ball. Just broke a few lines, took a few bounces. But it's good to see, isn't it? Like, he 3 games in a row, 30-plus touches, he's getting a lot of the ball, and he seems to be settling into that halfback role pretty well.
He's doing very well. He moves a lot better than what I do, mate, I can tell you now. he looks really impressive, and you know, it's disappointing, obviously, with his foot, and you know that we're not going to have him this week and continue that form that he's in. But a small silver lining is he gets a small break to rest the body. It was, you know, it's been a pretty intense first part of the season for him, which certainly be a lot more intense than what he's been used to in his junior days. So a little break might not hurt. And you know, someone else steps up now. But as Siobhan mentioned, we've got some quality in there. You know, it's just going back to that leadership thing. It's just unfortunate that the leaders that we have at the moment are coming off sort of, you know, losing seasons over the last couple of years. So yeah, it's hard to sort of ingrain, you know, for have these young kids to look up to these guys and go, well, what do we need to do to win? And they're almost like, well, I'm still trying to figure that out myself. So, you know, looking for that leadership for those guys. But, yeah, look, we do have the quality there. We all know that. Everyone can see that. And, you know, McKercher's, you know, a real shining light, and, you know, massive congrats to him for his nomination. So, yeah, look, there are green shoots, and I know, you know, we've heard that all the commentary around all that sort of stuff. We're aware of that. Our supporters are aware of that. You guys are aware of that. You know, the club's obviously aware of that as well. We just want to, you know, maybe see some a response or some quality football like we saw in the practice games. You know, the Collingwood practice game, the St Kilda one, and even the early start of the season. You know, what's changed since then? Yeah. You know, where's that sort of football gone?
Yeah, I mean, it was very much a proactive game plan back in the day, and generally after a few rounds it sort of settles itself down, but we've sort of almost gone on occasions too far the other way, trying to defend a lot more, but it doesn't seem to be working. We still seem to be copping a lot of scores, but yeah, that's the way it goes. I wouldn't mind getting your opinion on a couple of players. Now, there's been a lot of talk about these two individuals on socials. As you probably both are aware, Cameron Zerha and LDU. I'll give you LDU, Siobhan. He's coming in for a lot of criticism. Now, he had a good game last weekend. I thought he did. 35 touches, 9 clearances, 17 contested possessions, a goal, 5 scoring involvements. Obviously, the thing that's hurting him this year is the turnovers. He's coming 6th in the league for turnovers. I think the same as Harry Sheasel, which is quite a surprise coming from a player of that quality. But I feel like, yeah, we talk about leadership, and he's just probably, you know, George Wardlaw is just a bit too young at the moment. I feel like he just would, a player that could help him, like someone like Luke Parker, who can't get a game for the Swans, someone like that, or even on Ollie Wines they're talking about, you know, a player of that ilk could really help his game and take the pressure off him a little bit. How do you see his season so far, and do you think we need another player, a big-bodied midfielder, to help him out?
I'm very glad that you brought this up, Dean, because I think I didn't realise how strong a view I had on this until I saw a lot of the backlash on social media regarding LDU, and I kind of got a little bit hot under the collar, and I don't know why I feel so strongly about it. I think a part of me actually just feels incredibly sorry for him. There's a lot of players on the list that we can criticise at times for their, I don't want to say lack of trying, but their sort of lack of repeat follow-up efforts. I think with LDU, he's a man that's got a lot on his shoulders. I think his problem is he probably tries too hard and at times gets himself in trouble with a turnover or gets caught holding the ball because he doesn't have support in there. His game on the weekend I thought was actually phenomenal besides the turnovers. And I think what we have spoken about for a long time, even before we became sort of a little bit more poor on field, is that he is a one-way runner. I don't think the defensive side of his game is his best part, but at the same time, like what he can do offensively and what he does for us as a side in terms of his clearance work and work with that sort of sidestep and ability to get out of traffic. I think with LDU, you watch him, he'll win the ball, he'll get a clearance out, but he'll either kick it to the opposition or whatever it might be. In a side that's not struggling as much as ours, I'm telling you, he'll probably be leading the Brownlow medal. I just think he's struggling to carry the full load, and I don't think his teammates are helping him out at times either. And then he'll turn the ball over and he gets the spotlight on that turnover is highlighted further by the fact that maybe a player won't put in a full chase to try and, you know, win the ball back for us, or he's cooked by the time he goes to sort of win the ball back. There's a few things that happen on the weekend where I'll watch him and, you know, he'll kind of go, oh, you know, I've made the blue. he looks a little bit unfit to me sometimes. I think that's the sort of player he is. He's a quality player with not a lot of those around him at the moment. You touch on whether or not we need another midfielder. Now, I've just sat on this for a while. I just think free agency in the AFL at the moment is not helpful for sides that are at the bottom of the ladder. And we as a club are going to have to pay a lot of money or provide a really big contract for a player that is of a B to C sort of grade, a standard, or we try and lure in a Luke Parker or a Travis Boak or whoever it might be that's that player that'll come in and is at the end of their career but show what it takes to be an AFL footballer in terms of professionalism and, as Troy touched on before, kind of what Simo provided the boys, as in giving those, providing some sort of, bringing something in terms of a culture, a winning culture from another club or whatever it might be. That is really great in theory, but actually bringing it in practice is going to be really hard for our club to do. It'll have to be a lot of money or a really good deal with a coaching component to it. I don't know what it is, but I think we do need to get someone of that ilk into the club to help the young players with their standards, with their understanding of the game, whatever it might be. I know Liam Shields was brought in to do that, but I think someone like the boys you mentioned before would be of great benefit to someone, not just like LDU, but a lot of other players on the list. I think the criticism of LDU is a little bit unfair. I don't think he's ever going to be let's say a George Wardlaw, where you can see at the moment that he tackles for his life and he was also got that really incredible sort of offensive component to his game. I think maybe he can learn to become that sort of player, but at the moment LDU is the player he is. He does some brilliant things, makes some errors, but I think he just tries too hard to put the team on his shoulders at the moment, and that's why we're seeing those sorts of errors from him. Sometimes there's no excuse for not following up your work and not chasing the other way or making an error and not trying to win the ball back. I'm not saying that, but he's being let down by a lot of his teammates at the moment, and by God, would he benefit from a Parker or a Boak or a Wine, someone like that at the moment.
Yeah, I'm surprised Luke Parker can't get a game for the Swans. He was best on ground in the VFL on the weekend. He was far too good for that that quality of football.
Unfortunately, Dean, with that match-winning goal.
Yeah, oh, it was a good kick. I didn't see that coming. I've never seen him kick a torpedo in my life. But, yeah. I mean, look, the way that game was going, we probably would have got overrun anyway. But still, it was a pretty good finish from 60 metres out. Troy? Cameron Zahar is the other one. Sorry, as I clear my throat, is the other one that's copping a lot of criticism. People already saying that he's checked out, which I don't agree with. I can't fathom that a player's already thinking about his next contract and has checked out 8 rounds into a season. I honestly think he doesn't know where he wants to play next season. I don't think, maybe he's leaning one way or the other. I mean, but that can change each day. How have you seen him? Like, 7 goals in the last 3 weeks. He only kicked the one on a weekend. Are you as bullish on him as other supporters that he looks disinterested out on the field? I mean, it's hard to say by body language, because I think he's always been that type of player where he doesn't show too much emotion unless he's kicking, you know, goals regularly.
No, he doesn't, does he? I can't remember the exact game, but maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, he was really up and about and sort of got us going a little bit early on in the game. So I think the fight's there for him. In a similar vein to LDU, and these are the guys that I was – you're still there?
Yep. Yeah, I'm still
there, mate. Sorry. These are the guys I was sort of alluding to before, is that LDU, Zerha, Larky are the guys that our young – talent are looking up to for direction and guidance on how to dig ourselves out of these holes. And, unfortunately, these guys don't have very positive win-loss ratios themselves. So, I agree wholeheartedly with both of you about, getting the likes of a Wines or a Boak or a Parker in. So then the likes of LDU and Zerha, the ones can look to them for the guidance and help them get out and work ways through these difficult situations. So that would certainly help. it is a worry with Cam Zerha. I love the way he goes about it. You know, when he's up and about, he's very difficult to stop. I just don't think he has the support in the forward line. Touched on a little bit in terms of key position players. Like, you look at the top 10, top 12 teams at the moment, how many of them only have one key position forward and are being successful? So, and he's not a key position forward. He is a sort of that roving, bullocking half forward flanker that can push up the ground and work back and be difficult matchup because he can play tall, he can play small. But he's getting the second best defender and we need someone to come in and take that load off him. And that's where I think we'll get the best of him in our forward line, but we just don't have that at the moment. So it's a really tough situation. He's obviously from WA, so, there's obviously that factor that will come into it. And he just needs to stay the course just like the rest of us. it's easy for us to say. But, I've got no issue with, what he's coming out and saying. And, I think it's fair how he's looking at it. And he wants to see not necessarily the wins and losses. He'd love to see the wins and losses change. But, he'd want to see that improvement, those more of those green shoots coming through on a more regular basis, and he'll be able to build his case one way or the other, I guess.
Yeah, I think a good player comp for him is someone like a Kyle Langford, who has Peter Wright, Harrison Jones, two key position players that can take a lot of the aerial work, and even a Jake Stringer, who's a good third foil. Whereas, like you said, Troy, he's getting a second best defender each week, and he's becoming almost a target man for the long kicks as well. Nick Larkey's out of form as well, which is probably not helping. So, but I still find it hard to believe that he's checked out.
I agree with you. I don't think he's checked out either.
No, I don't think he's far away from exploding in a game too. I think there'll be a week where he'll kick four or five. Anyways, we'll move forward to the team changes. Siobhan, I guess the big one is Will Phillips dropped it again. I think it's purely based on matchups. We went a bit smaller and a bit more big bodied and contested players last week. Whereas this week you might see a bit of a taller side with Toby Pink coming back in the team possibly. How do you see it? Are you a bit worried about Will Phillips again?
Look, I don't want to come on here and make grand statements, but you just feel like the more and more he goes in and out of the side, the more likely it is that his papers are almost stamped for the end of the year. I just think we're talking before about someone coming out and maybe speaking from higher up at the club. If I had my opportunity to ask a question, the first thing I would ask was, what are you guys wanting from Will Phillips? What do you want for him to do to keep his place in the side? Because I think when you drop someone after they've only had one or two chances at it, I don't know what type of message that's sending and how he's going to get better. You either give him a sustained run or you don't bring him in at all. I think having this merry-go-round, I can't understand it. Maybe it is the balance of the team, and we did speak last week playing up in Darwin where clearly we need to be a bit smaller because the ball was like a cake of soap and it was hot and humid and the conditions warranted a smaller side. It made sense, but I feel for him a little bit. Also from the fact that we've spoken about this so many times on this podcast, Dean, about just what's Will Phillips' competitive edge, what's his advantage, that every player has to have something that they bring to the side that is why they what makes them a good player. I still feel like we don't know that about Will Phillips yet. What does he do that separates him from everyone else? What can he bring to the side that's sort of a non-negotiable sort of thing for him? I can't figure it out. I think on the weekend he did spend a little bit of time tagging Matt Rowell, and he did a great job at that if that's what his role was. I'm going back to this again and I don't intend to do it, but he's a pick three as a midfielder. Do you want your pick three midfielder to become a tagger or do you want him to be an impactful midfielder on the game? I didn't think he was that bad on the weekend, which is why I was a little bit shocked. And I don't know what message that's sending to him where I actually thought he played okay. There are times when he's had poorer games than that and he doesn't retain his spot in the side. So he's a little bit lost at the moment in our environment at our club. And if we do decide to part ways with him at the end of the year, I don't know what value he's going to get. It's a weird situation and one that I can't comprehend. And if he keeps coming in and out of the side, I can't put my finger on what exactly they want from him. It's a bit of a mess at the moment. I think there's no point harping on what we should have done with that pick and how it's all played out. We've got to give the kid an opportunity and he's just not getting it at the moment. I don't know what you guys think, but it's a head scratcher.
Yeah, I mean, look, we wouldn't get much more than probably a pick in the 30s for him if we did trade him. But I think it's up to him at the end of the day. And Troy, he's in and out of the team. There's going to be other teams that are going to make a play for him. There is talent there. And he's just not getting the opportunity because we do have a lot of midfielders. And he wasn't the worst last week. But I guess, you know, what would, you know, in someone in his situation, out of contract, there's other teams coming for him. You'd have to think that he'd have to seriously consider looking at his other options if he's just going to be in and out of the team all year, Troy.
Yeah, you certainly look at it that way. You look at the midfield we got at the moment. I think, Wardlaw, Powell, LDU, as mentioned, there's similar sizes. Sheasel's in there. Similar sizes, you know, similar, I guess, you know, if you look at a midfielder for midfielder, so you've got to be basing it on, you know, what they bring to the team. And, you know, if he's in there, who goes out? Because you can't obviously squeeze them all in there. So it just might be one of those unfortunate things where, you know, we have very similar players of, you know, his size and what he can bring to the team. And I guess he... You know, what else can he bring to the team that is a point of difference that can keep him in and, and someone else out? And, at this stage, you look at, you know, those guys that I mentioned, they're you know, probably in front of him. So you look at other areas of the ground, you know, maybe he can squeeze in. But I think it's a positional thing this week for him. Essendon, pretty tall and mobile in their forward line. So I dare say we will need to bring, you know, someone like Pink in to cover a tall down there. So someone has to make way. You know, Dersma had, you know, four goals on the weekend. You know, is he likely to come back? We'll have to wait and see. So, yeah, you got to have a look at the opposition we're coming up against. You know, they're in some really good form. So we got to have a real close look at them and who we can match up on well and where we can get some sort of advantage. So, this week I think maybe it looks likely that it's just a positional thing that he unfortunately falls out.
Yeah, well, certainly does look like that. And, yeah, like you said, they are a bit more taller and mobile, so it probably squeezes him out, unfortunately. Siobhan, no McKercher, obviously out with the foot injury, so I'm not so sure how long that might be out for. It sounds like it might be multiple weeks. Do you think that pushes Sheasel back in the back line this week?
I think that would be a smart move. I'm certainly not at all saying that Sheasel in the midfield isn't a positive thing and certainly a building block for him going forward, but we miss him down there. I really think we do. Like, he's just such a class talent and I just wish we could clone five of him and put one on each end of the ground and some. But unfortunately, we don't have the technology to do that yet. So we've just got to settle for one. And I think he probably will go back down back this week just to provide a bit of that run and drive and leadership and composure and all the other really positive things he brings. I think the last 2 weeks, him playing majority of the time mid has been a really good step for his career going forward. But this week, I think he'll play in the back half. Does Eddie Ford play squash? Don't really know where he's at and why he's not in the side. I think he probably would have been a nice player to have in the team. And looking at it, I think maybe they'd bring in Miller Bergman potentially. And if they did decide to keep Sheasel in the midfield, I think Miller's had some really positive performances in the VFL and has been knocking on the door. And with Hardiman going out of the side, I think he's probably the logical replacement to probably go back down there. And he, Hardiman's had a good few weeks, but I wouldn't say he's a lockdown defender. And I think maybe against the Bombers' very dangerous forward line with Stringer and Langford and Wright and others, plenty of options they've got down there. I think they probably use Bergman more as a lockdown defender type than another sort of player that can drive and run out of there for us. So I think he probably comes in too.
Now, yeah, I mean, just looking at their forward line, Siobhan made some very good points. They've got a lot of mid-size and tall forwards, Troy. I mean, they've got Langford, Stringer, Peter Wright, Harrison Jones is quite a tall forward. Do you think that Toby Pink comes into the team and plays in the back line?
Yeah, I think he has to. Comben's been solid. Cora's been, okay-ish. Like, I haven't sort of focused a lot on him. I've sort of focused a lot on how Charlie Comben's been going and how he settled in. But personally, I think a lot of our defence will be aided, or whatever the opposite of that is, in terms of how much midfield pressure we put on. Because I personally think that our backline has been let down by lack of midfield pressure and the ease in which opposition teams can work their way through the middle of the ground, and it comes in so quickly, it'll make any defence look silly. But yeah, on the occasions where we do put midfield pressure on and sort of slow the play down and make it hard for opposition, that's where you get the likes of Comben and Core and that floating across and doing intercept marks and things like that. So I'd be putting it on our midfield this week just to be right up in the faces of the opposition and not allowing so much free ball movement coming through the middle of the ground or out of our forward line in particular, but yeah, through the middle of the ground and help our defenders by making the inside 50s from opposition teams more rushed or more elevated and not as direct. So that's sort of line of defence I'd be going down this week.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Siobhan, I mean, I guess one player that is a big engine in the midfield is Zach Merritt. Last couple of times we've played him, we've had Liam Shields, we've put a tag on him. And last year we put Curtis Taylor on Zach Merritt. Now, Curtis Taylor's been named on the extended bench. Could that be another possibility to try and shut him out? Because it seems to work pretty well if you can take him out of the game.
Yeah, it's definitely an option. I think I'd do anything to have Zach Merritt playing for my club at the moment. I think he's probably what we're talking about when you talk about a player that leads by example. I think he's a great leader, performs on the field. He's a complete midfielder in terms of his kind of taking his goal kicking to another level and just racks up the ball for fun. And he's a very, very quality footballer. And I think it wouldn't hurt to have someone run alongside him. And whether or not Clarko goes down the same path as what he did when we played Brisbane, and he just said to George Wardlaw, this is your opponent this afternoon, enjoy. There's a lot of really quality sort of attributes that our players can learn from someone like Zach Merritt. So it's possible that he goes down the head-to-head path, or he decides to use a player like Taylor or Shields, whoever it might be, to shut him out of the game and maybe give us more of an opportunity to win the ball and do something with it. So those two are certainly options, but I think Essendon are pretty strong across the park. So if you shut down Merritt, you never know, a Parrish or a player like that can maybe get on top of you as well. So it just depends what path they go down. I liked what they did with Raoul last week against the Gold Coast, but then again, I mean, Anderson got off the chain. So there's always one won't get you, the other one might.
Yeah, oh, that's right. I don't want Darcy Parrish getting 30-plus touches. If you're going to sacrifice someone, then you might as well try and cut Merritt out and let Parrish and Caldwell and so forth get the possessions, because they're not as damaging as Merritt at the end of the day. Troy, this is our biggest rival, Essendon. There's no excuses. These are the games you really get yourself up for, don't you?
Absolutely. And going back to the Simo comment I made earlier on, I distinctly remember a season. I can't remember which one exactly, but we were struggling early in the season. We're coming up against the Bombers, it was on a Friday night, and you know, Simo brought us all in and said, "I don't care how crap we're going. I don't care, you know, how many games we're losing, but we're playing playing the Bombers. It's going to be prime time. Everyone's going to be watching. We do not lose this game, no matter what, and especially not to these so and so's. I won't say exactly what he said, but yeah, especially not to them. And it sort of it set the tone. You know, this was say a Wednesday, you know, the Wednesday before our game on a Friday night, and it set the tone leading into the game. And you know, as a I was maybe 22, 23 years old myself, you know, comes through, it's like, okay, I don't want to let this guy down, because, you know, these guys have sort of lived it over the years, that sort of rivalry and the crap we've copped from Bomber supporters and whatnot over the years. And it's like, I didn't want to let them down. So, you know, and I'm pretty sure everyone else felt the same way. And we come out and we beat the Bombers that night, and it was really gratifying. I hope someone's going around there this week and really sowing that seed in the minds of the players that we don't lose to these pricks. And you know, we come out all guns blazing, and you know, if we lose, we lose, but it's how we lose, you know. And I just want to see us go out, have red hot crap, be right up in their faces, be annoying, really be in their faces, and make them earn everything that they get. And you know, as what happened on that night that I mentioned, you never know, we might come away with a win, but yeah, we got to set the foundation first.
I was at that game, Troy, on a Friday night. So, yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, I think we won by a couple of goals. It might have just been about 10 points or something like that. We got a goal late to seal the game. I can't remember much about that game, but I remember John Baird starting forward in that game for some reason. So, yeah, but, yeah, good win. Siobhan, does it add more spice with Ben McKay and Todd Goldstein going there this season, or do we just hate Essendon anyway so it makes no difference?
Probably both. I think I absolutely love that little story from Troy, and I think there is an element of you hope that internally there's a little bit more drive to come out and have a bit of fire in the belly, and I've got no doubt that McKay and Goldstein might add a little bit more fuel to the fire. It's hard to dislike Todd Goldstein, that's an understatement. I think the bloke's a champion of the league, let alone of our club, but there's a little bit of salt in the wound the way sort of Ben McKay left, and maybe I think some fans have taken a little bit of umbrage to the way that our club's been spoken about a little bit by those two individuals in the media, and sly comments about playing in front of big crowds and marquee matches and that sort of stuff. I do hope that in the back of their heads there is a little bit of that echo. So I'm hoping that there is a response, that there is a competitive performance that they've got for us, and like Troy mentioned, no matter where we sort of are in the ladder or how we're going, I just hope that they get themselves up for a game like this, and it probably does add a little bit of a spice, like I said, that there are two former players there, and one sort of exited in not a sour way, but a way that, you know, he did decide to up and leave the club. So, yeah, it'll make for an interesting contest, and an interesting contest between potentially Larky and McKay, and certainly Sherry and Goldstein, sort of the prodigy of Goldie in many ways too. So it'll make for a good contest, I hope.
Yeah, well, hopefully Goldie can pass the torch to him on Sunday afternoon. But we'll see how we go. Troy, in your heart of hearts, are we a chance to win this week?
The way that we've been going, no. but, you know, yeah, look, we got to go into every game thinking that we can win as supporters, as players, as coaches. So, and you know, as Dennis Pagan used to say, any team can beat any other team on any given day. And you know, that's the little things that we just got to hold on to. And you know, we've seen, and this is a frustrating thing, is that, you know, we go back to those practice games that I mentioned, the start of the season, you know. It's not that we're asking or expecting the players to do something that's impossible, because they've already proven that they can do it. That's the frustrating part. And I guess, you know, Clarkson has alluded to that as well. You know, we've been good on occasions. We just have to be better for longer and better more often and that sort of thing. And that's ultimately what's going to come down to. On Sunday, we're going to have good patches. We're going to have bad patches, and it's minimizing the gap and minimizing the distance and time between each one. So, and making the most of our opportunities when we do get them. So, hope the boys are up for the task. It's going to be a massive game, and it will be an ideal game to try and turn the corner of sorts. So, yeah, we'll see how we go. I just want to see us up in their faces and really sort of piss them off and try and get them off their game and just be up and about, ready to go.
That sounds good, Troy. Siobhan, any chance?
Unfortunately not, no. I would like to maybe have a better attitude, but it's harder and harder to see us winning against anyone with the way that we're travelling at the moment. I think Troy raised some really good points in that little discussion there. I think we just want to see us be competitive. But in that last quarter, we looked cooked. And I know the conditions up in Darwin would have been extremely energy sapping just with the heat and the way the game was played. So I watched that last quarter and I looked at the AFL app and thought, oh, who are we playing? And then I saw it was Essendon and I sunk in my chair a little bit further. Unfortunately, I just think that's going to play a factor in it. They're flying at the moment as well. And I think we've mentioned this a couple of times during the podcast, but we just need a win somewhere to believe that what we're doing is working and it'll provide fruit in the long run. But I don't see it being this week, and it's really hard to win games when, unfortunately, I just think the lads don't believe that we can at the moment. So it's a tough ask and one that I don't think the mountain will be able to climb. But I think, like Troy mentioned earlier, it's just the way that we compete, the way we lose, the way we go about it. And I'm just hopeful that we can put in a team performance. And White Clarko keeps mentioning it's one quarter or a few moments. I just think we have to put that together for longer. And hopefully we see it for more than one or more than two. Let's make it 2.5 or 3 or whatever it might be, that we just stay in the contest. And I think a trend, and we started the game against the Gold Coast so well, and we should have leveled the scores and that bloody siren. But I think the way that we start the game or the way that we stay in the game is going to be really telling. And hopefully it's not over by halftime. We can just stay in touch and see where we go to from there. So hopefully some good steps forward and fingers crossed for a competitive performance against the Dons.
We're certainly hoping. In saying all that, Troy, what's your final prediction?
Unfortunately, I think the Bombers are going to win. They're flying at the moment. They're up and about and, things are ticking along just nicely for them. And, unfortunately, we're pretty much the opposite. So, it's sort of saddens me to sort of talk about it like this, but if we can get within, 5 or 6 goals, that to me that'll be somewhat of a sign that we've had a bit of a crack.
Yeah, I mean it's about stepping stones now and just taking that step to being competitive, I don't think what's our closest loss, about 38 points this year. So, we certainly, if you can get within 5 goals, it's a stepping stone. I mean, you've seen West Coast do it a few weeks ago against the Swans, put in a really competitive performance. That then led to a couple of good wins and more competitive performance. They got within a goal against Essendon, I think it was last week or the week before. So, that's what we're certainly hoping. Siobhan, what's your final prediction?
It's tough. It's really tough. And like Troy said, it does really sadden me that we're discussing things in the way that we are. And if we get within 5 or 6 goals, it's been a great performance. I'm trying to look at it a little bit differently so that I don't feel so depressed. I feel like at the moment, it's sort of like if we can win 2 quarters or we can win 2 and a bit quarters, I'll be really happy. If you look at some of the stats this year, it's actually so shocking that we haven't really been able to win many quarters against sides. So I feel like if we look at it that way, it's a bit of a victory. So I think Essendon will win and win really comfortably. But if we can win 2 quarters, let's say, and that might be the start of the game or the end of the game, whatever it is, and I think we've done quite well. They're just potent everywhere and have players that are in the career best form, and we don't have that at the moment. Even looking at it sometimes through the lens of, oh, I hope we can kick X amount of score. I mean, I thought we scored okay against the Gold Coast, so if we can maybe score 10 goals or, you know, do something like that in the game, I think we've done quite well. I just think it's going to be a tough afternoon, but it's all about, you know, at the end of the day, watching the team grow together, and fingers crossed we remain in the game for some time.
Yeah, well, we've only won 4 quarters for the year, so nine rounds. So to win it would be a pretty good effort. And they are flying, like both of you mentioned. They are playing some really good football. They had a really good win against GWS last week. So hopefully they relax a bit this week and just be a little bit off and wear a little bit on. Sometimes that's all it takes. Troy, I've held you up long enough. Any final words out there?
No, good to be back on, Dean. I don't know, I've sort of stuffed you around a little bit over the last few weeks, but yeah, good to have a chat with yourself. Good to have a chat with you again, Siobhan. The passion's still there, you know. We go again. So we stick with it. I've vented. I've aired my frustrations. I'll move on. You guys have been my punching bag for me, so I'm in a happy place now. So all good.
No, we stay the course, don't we? We know where we're at.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for coming on. Siobhan, always a pleasure. We'll chat probably next week. And, yeah, go the Roos.
Absolutely. No, it's been a real pleasure, Dean and Troy. And like Troy said, I think, and like you mentioned beautifully there, Dean, it's about staying the course, and it's tough at the moment. But eventually things will get better, and we'll listen back to these and maybe have a smile one day. So, yeah, go Roos.
So thank you very much to Siobhan Rowe and Troy Makepeace for coming on the show once again. And thank you very much to all you lovely listeners for all the likes, retweets, and comments you all put out for the show. And telling your friends about it as well. It is much appreciated. Now, I did say last Sunday that I was trying to get another podcast on during the week, but unfortunately, due to time constraints, I couldn't get another one on. It was very tight, so sorry about that. But you got tonight with Troy Makepeace, so that was good to get him on. So I should be back either Sunday evening, straight after the Essendon game, or I might even do Monday evening. Just to process the whole game. If we win, I'll probably podcast during the game. If we are winning, and we look like we're going to win. But no, I don't think that will happen, unfortunately. But yeah, like Troy Makepeace said, stay the course. We know where we're at. No, I'm just joking, Troy. Yeah, I'll be back either Sunday or Monday. So bye for now, and go Roos.